Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's JAS call on Tuesday, the 3rd of May. We have Rafik Damak, Tijani Benjema, Sundra Suknanan, Carlos Aguirre, John Rahman Khan, Olivier Crépin Leblanc, Alan Greenberg, Dev Anand Tiliksing, Eric Bronner Williams, Evan Leibovich. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Giry, Carla Valenti, and myself, Gisela Gruber White. And we have apologies today from Alain Béranger, Tony Harris, Michaela Nalon, Andrew Mack, Carlton Samuels, Boudouin Chombé, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, and Alex Gakuru. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list, and if I can please remind you to all state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Rafik.
Thank you, Gisela. Thank you, everybody, for joining today's call. For the agenda, we have just the item that we agreed last time that we are going to review the part 3 and part 4, especially the red parts, and to reach agreement on them. I want just to say that in order to make quick progress, I suggest that we try to really to not spend so much time in every part, so like no more than 5 or 10 minutes. And especially we shouldn't bring in new topics and to try to work on the existing part and to reach agreement. And if there is any comment, it will be more helpful to suggest some rewording that will help especially the scribes. Thank you. So let's start. For the leading from the scripts, is it Evan or Sintra who want to take the lead? Evan?
Okay, I'll do it.
Ah, okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, all right. So let me just get out of the editing. And all right. So we did get to a certain point on part 3. But right now, if you go to the wiki right now, we have a certain amount of text. Some is in red. Some is in multi. We got multicolored text going on. And so what I'd like to do is try and nail this down so we can agree on the wording of this. This is the summary of the criteria, which will be applied in detail in, immediately following. So what I'd like to do is get everyone's approval, comments, whatever, on the part that is between the words part 3 and 3.1. So could everyone please concentrate on that? I think we are okay to get rid of the stuff wording to come because a lot of this has already been put in. So I want to draw your attention to the text that is in black, red, and green and to find out what you think. Because here is where we're going to put in the summary of what we're going to say as well as the formula that binds them. So, at this point, are there any immediate comments? Alan, I see your hand up.
Yeah, a couple of them. I don't think there in just before the numbers 1 and 2, there's an equal weight. I don't think we should say equal weight because I think the concept of weighting is inappropriate here. I think we need to say there are two main criteria, both of which must be satisfied. I'm not trying to wordsmith. I'll trust you or someone to do that. But I don't think we should talk about weight because that implies something which I don't think is appropriate here.
Okay.
Hello? Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yes,
somebody,
yes.
We've lost somebody on the call.
Okay. In terms of the green, just in terms of volume, I would try to summarize those in a sentence or two sentences and not have them as bullet points. I think it overwhelms the previous points. And lastly, the number 3, I don't think is appropriate. The numbering, I don't think is appropriate. I think either we leave that sentence out or incorporate it into the preamble saying, you know, applicants are supposed to self-declare. That's it.
Okay. Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, I support the first remark of Alan. I proposed in my draft, the working group has determined two main criteria to be used, etc. There is a wording that I don't understand. One, financial need of the applicant, primary and mandatory, and then if applying for financial support and technical need of applicant, if applying for technical support, and I don't understand this wording. Point two, I propose to modify it in this way. Applications remove must serving the public interest, and then remove the part from applicant are required to, etc. Till by, because it is more text which is not needed, and under between brackets we put increasing skills investment in, etc. Till GTLDs, etc. And you close the brackets.
Well, what's in the red text is new stuff that was entered in on Friday. Is this adding too much? It actually adds certain things such as gender balance and contribution to national economies that we hadn't had in the wording before then. So, Tijani, do you want to keep that in, or is this just too late in addition?
I think that we can keep the text, but we have to refine it. That's all. There is added value in this text, I think, because it explains more what is the public interest, for example.
Okay, Tijani, could I ask a favor, please? Could you take your revision to this point number two and send it either by email or by chat to myself or Sintra, and we can incorporate it directly?
Okay, I am happy to do so, but even what I sent you by email isn't in the text now. What I proposed last time, and you agreed, and the group agreed, it is not in the text now. So I am happy to do, but I hope that it will be taken into account, that's all.
Okay, Tijani, sorry about that. I thought what you sent me I put in. I apologize if I did not.
No problem. Okay, I will send it.
So for number one, we're leaving as is, including the words in red. For number two, Tijani is suggesting some new wording.
It is more refining, removing something and adding a few things.
Now, does your proposed wording depend on those following bullets?
Yes.
Okay. So...
Evan, may I just say, Tijani, I put in your text, it's under 3.1, the text that you had in your email.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
No, but excuse me, Sintra, no, it is still the same text in the 3.1.
Okay, still we'll the get same to text. That in a second, Tijani. I'm just right now trying to concentrate on your suggestions here.
Okay, no problem. We will not argue about that. No. I will send you my suggestion for point two.
Okay.
For point one, two, there is a wording that I don't understand. If you can explain it, or perhaps we have to remove it for point one.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask for you to send your suggested rewording, and then if that's clear enough, that will replace what's here.
Okay.
All right. So Tijani is suggesting wording that will refine point number two. Is everybody okay with the bullets for point number three?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't understand the question, Evan.
Okay. Right. Okay. Right now, we're on these numbering points. 1, 2, and then there's a bunch of bullets, and then number 3. I'm just trying to nail down that everyone's okay with this wording.
But you said the bullets for number 3.
No. Sorry, the bullets that are associated with point number 2.
Well, I have my hand up. It's a little bit confusing that there are some criteria that are now, such as fostering gender balance and presence of minorities, that are now in the text, and then there are some in the bullets. It's not clear which ones fell under what, other than they got drafted in different ways. I think at this point, I think we need to make sure that the sentences parse and are understandable and clear, and I don't think we have that right now. In number 1, the parenthetical primary and mandatory, I'm not quite sure what that means anymore.
That's going back to the milestone report that was basically saying that financial support was the main need and everything else was secondary. That came out of the milestone report.
So if you only have technical need, you can't apply under this program.
Correct.
Okay.
Financial
that's fine. It's not.
Alan is.
Yeah.
Again, if this group wants to change that, that's okay. I'm just trying to, this is just going back to the milestone report that said financial need is paramount.
Evan, I'm not focusing right now on what I want. I'm focusing on making sure that what we have, which is supposed to be final in 2 or 3 days, is going to be understandable. That's my issue.
I'm with you there.
Okay, I'm not trying to change what it says contextually.
Okay.
I just want to make sure it's clear. And in terms of number 2, with some items in the bullets and some items in the text, it is far from clear to me.
I agree with you. Okay.
I think this needs a clean redrafting. Now that we agree this is what it should be saying, it needs to be put into language that is going to be understood.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to do that on word by word on this call, but I think it needs to be done before the next call.
The way I understand it right now, Alan, is that Tijani is going to be sending a reworded version of the point number 2. And that, so what the writing team is going to do is take that, put that in, and make sure that together with the bullets that you see here are clearly reassembled.
That's the intent.
Okay. Now, the one thing that I want to find out from the group is these new items that are added. Increasing skills, investment in skills base of a target community, fostering gender balance, presence of minorities, and so on. The new text that is in the red, is that staying or is that going? The stuff that's in the green text goes back to the milestone report and previous discussions. The stuff that is in red is new as of last week. So I want to get some direction from the group on what that is. Tijani, go ahead.
Sorry, I forgot my hand. Okay, it's okay.
Okay, well, I'm asking the group right now for some direction. We have some new text that was inserted into the red, and Alan makes a really good point that this is potentially confusing because we have a set of criteria in the red text, and we have a set of criteria and bullet points right underneath. What is the direction of this group? Is the new text in the red new criteria that is going to be listed, or is that just an aberration that comes out?
I'm happy to keep it, but it needs to be made so it can be understood.
Okay.
And right now it looks like there's two orthogonal sets of criteria, those that are in the text and those that are in the bullet points, and somehow you have to meet, I'm not sure, one of each of them or something
I'm
like that.
This is
and it just doesn't read well right now.
Okay, Sandra, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to say that what is in the red, those are just examples of ways that they can demonstrate public interest, right? So it's not necessary that they have to, I don't think we really have to define all. We can't define the scope of public interest per se, but we're just giving examples here. So maybe we could just make that clearer, but to say that we need to define what gender balance is, I think that's a waste of our time.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Now it's clear. So there's a sort of general point of serving the public interest that could be met by a number of different things, such as these, whereas the ones in the bullet points are more specific ones that have come out of earlier discussions. Okay, we can work with that. Sentry, your hand's still up. Do you have more to add?
No, I'll take down my hand. Thank you.
Okay, Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I think that Alan has a valid point. We have to be clear, and those examples can be taken as criteria. And perhaps if we keep them here, people who are not applying, for example, for something who will better the gender balance or will not fall in one of those kind of public interest, will not be eligible for support.
I think we have reasonable direction from the group right now that the intent is to try and combine these. The suggestions that are in red are examples of something that could serve the public interest, whereas the ones in bullet points are specific ones that we want to direct to whoever is making judgments on the criteria. I think that there's something to work with for the drafting team in order to work with this. Tijani, I've received your revised wording, so I'll try and put that in a moment. Now, okay, continuing to go down, is everybody okay with the list in the bullet points?
Yeah, Evan, it's Alan. I'm not at my computer this second. I think if you read it now, and in light of what Sintra said, I think you probably need to switch the order around because the bullet points are specific types of applications that we will look on in favor. The items that were in the text are examples, and it does say, for instance, of the kinds of benefits one can get out of it. So I think you probably need to flip the order, but they are two different lists. And I think if you flip the order and make it clear that the things in the text that are currently in the text are examples of types of benefits that one can hope for. I think a bit of rewording will clean it all up.
Okay, I agree with you. We need to keep moving. So I want to now just make sure that the list of bullet points that is currently in green, and there's one more in red that also goes back to the milestone report. Is that list of bullets okay and clear as worded?
I have my hand up.
Tijani, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. First, what is the decision concerning point one? Is the last part of point one valid? Because I don't understand it.
Financial need of the applicant, primary and mandatory, if applying for financial support, and technical need of the applicant if applying for technical support.
But, Evan, there should be no if there if it's mandatory.
No, you're right. This part needs to be cleaned up.
Okay. So this is the first point. Second point, I agree with the bullet points, but the last one, we have to get agreement on it. When I proposed to modify a little bit the criteria for the criteria for not being eligible for support, there was a big reaction from the group concerning the government. So before putting this point, we have to have an agreement on it. Last point. I am talking about the last point.
Okay, Tijani, your point is well taken. In the milestone report, there was an explicit wish that specifically government and state-owned companies should be not exempt from this.
Yes.
The GAC has explicitly requested that we consider adding in purely government-sponsored applications as eligible for the criteria, and we need to get some direction from the group on whether this is an acceptable change to what was done in the milestone report or not.
Exactly.
Tijani, do you have more to add specifically on this? What is your opinion on it?
I personally think that we can do something, but perhaps not as as it is worded now.
Don't worry about the details of the wording. You're absolutely correct in saying that we need to deal with the issue whether or not this comes in differently from the milestone report or stays out. So, to Jenny, you're saying it's okay to bring back, to bring in, to allow
yes.
for government entities to apply.
I have other comments to, for the bullying points also, wording comments. So if you want, I can send it by email.
Okay. Dev, go ahead.
Thank you, Evan. Perhaps the regarding the green text, perhaps you could reword it in the sense of, all right, take the first one, community-based applications such as cultural, linguistic, and ethnic. Just a clarification. Is it means that it's the application has to be a community-based GTLD that is operated for the benefit of either a cultural, linguistic, or ethnic community from an emerging market or nation? That's my question.
I could respond to that. That listing is basically the list of applicants that can apply. All right? That listing in the milestone report relates to the applicant.
Okay. But I mean, the first one talks about the community-based application, mm-hmm. not the applicant. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say, what we want to say is like stated like an application. The applicant must be, you know, bullet point. The application must be bullet point.
Actually, I've already considered the possibility of changing this section along those lines, because some of the qualities that we're talking about are qualities of the applicant, and some of the things that we're talking about are qualities of the application. And
yeah.
I think it would make it a little clearer here if we were to make that distinction clear, that there are certain things we expect out of the application and certain things we expect out of the applicant. And I think we can do that while maintaining total consistency with the actual points that are being discussed here.
The only comment I have on that is that if we want to refer specifically to the milestone report as it does here, this is how it was. It was a mix rather than separation. Mm-hmm. All right? So that reference, I suppose, will have to come out. But as long as it's covered, I don't see an issue.
Okay. Let's move on, please. Now, there's a red point number 3. Applicants give a self-declaration that they're eligible to receive support. The reason that was put in is because there are some criteria that are positive, that is, you must be this, and some criteria that are negative, you must not be this.
Mm-hmm.
And the intention was that the applicant would certify for themselves that they, to their knowledge, met these posted criteria. Does this need to be there? Should it come out, or is it okay? Cintra, go ahead.
I believe Alan said that this should come out. I don't know if you want to confirm, Anne, that it should form part of the main body text at the start. But in any event, I do think that we need to list it just to let them know that we do require a specific undertaking or declaration by them.
Okay, Alan, you're next in the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the sentence needs to be cleaned up because it doesn't parse very well. I don't think it needs a number, however. I think having it a general statement saying we expect applicants to self-declare how they meet these various criteria is a reasonable statement, and I would leave it where it is at the end, unnumbered, because I think it needs to stand out. In terms of your original question you asked a while ago of should we keep the red in, the from a developing country governmental or parastatal applicant, I think we have to because there's a huge paragraph, the second paragraph in Section 3, talks about us leaving it out initially, but we've decided that because the GAC has indicated strong support for it, we will figure out a way to do it. So I don't think we have any choice but to include it.
Well, the paragraph that was in there was the GAC had asked for. We had not confirmed whether or not this went along.
The working group will work to obtain a mutually acceptable definition and criteria to fit government applications with the GAC. It says we will.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So it looks like we are okay with everything. I can be taken out because...
Sorry, we're just sorting out the noise now.
Okay, the blue text can come out. Now, as well, it is necessary to combine and weigh these criteria in a manner that provides a predictable and stable indication of the kinds of applications. So, do we need to do that? Do we need, there's been a couple of different application formulas that have been put in. One is a little further down in the red just before part four. Elaine, I believe, has put one in the comments. Now, Eric, you are not in Adobe Connect. Do you have anything to add in anything so far?
Evan,
Eric,
this is
are
Eric.
You on the call?
It's profoundly difficult to follow the text with... I'll have to respond by email when I access the net later on today or tomorrow.
Okay. Okay then. So what we're looking for at this point is all right. So we're moving on. The part in red there the part in red that says as well as is necessary to combine and weight. That line in red will come out because there's mention of the formula later on.
Exactly.
Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks, Evan. In the formula, it doesn't mention and between the demonstrate financial need, demonstrate need to service a community, and certify that its corporate structure is not eligible according to 3.2. I understand it is and, isn't it? It has to satisfy all three of these conditions.
Where are you right now? Are you jumping ahead of us?
Formula.
Application formula. You mentioned the application formula, so I've jumped to the application.
Oh, sorry. I made reference to it, but we're still right now trying to make our way down the text.
Okay, all right. Forget it then. Thanks.
We'll definitely get to it because there's that text, and also Elaine has also submitted a suggestion as well. Okay, so right now we are on 3.1. So the text that is in 3.1, there is only one part that is in red, and that is whether or not the annual income, unencumbered assets, not more than five times the conventional cost of a TLD currently set at 185. To Jenny, I know that you've frequently commented on this. I'd like to nail this down right now if we can. So this is the only part that is in red on section 3.1. Does anyone have any comments? To Jenny, would you like to just make your point again? So right now that middle bullet point is saying maximum annual income should not be more than five times the cost of getting a TLD at $185,000. Do we leave that in? Do we make it more vague? Do we change the number? Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. First of all, the minimum. For the minimum, I gave an alternative text saying that this minimum has to cover the financial instrument obligation, which is in the DAG, and which will apply to the applicant because we requested to reduce it. This is for the minimum. For the maximum, I proposed last time, and nobody opposed on it, I proposed to keep only $185,000. Because if we take five times, it will be almost $1 million. And I don't see how we can help someone who has in hand $1 million.
Okay. But Tijani, this particular line is talking about maximum income. So
yeah.
This is saying you can't have maximum income over five times the cost of getting a TLD.
Yes, I know. But someone who has five times can have the support. And I don't agree with that.
So you want this lowered?
Yeah.
To what? To three times?
No, I said one time.
You said to one time?
Yeah.
Okay, so Tijani is proposing that that middle bullet point, instead of saying maximum annual income not being more than five times the conventional cost, Tijani is saying not being more than the cost itself. So the annual income of the applicant should not be more than $185,000. I have an X mark from Olivier. Does anybody want to comment on this? I mean, okay, Olivier, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Evan. No, thanks. I was just going to say the $185,000 is really the application fee. Running the GTLD is going to be a lot higher than that. If you put a limit of $185,000 being the upper limit for being able to help an organization, we're not going to be helping that organization at all. The only thing we'll be doing is to make it fail or help it fail.
This is Eric. I'd like to get in the queue now.
Okay. Go ahead and then to Jenny.
Go ahead who?
Eric.
Eric.
Thank you. I disagree utterly with what all of you has just said. The cost of running .cat was trivial compared to the fee. The cost of running .museum was infinitesimal compared to the fee. The cost of running co-op was very small compared to the fee. The cost of running Arrow was very small compared to the fee. It is madness to think that because staff has come up with a number close to a fifth of $1 million, that it takes $1 million to actually start what amounts to a database with a front end.
Okay, Eric, going on from that, trying to resolve this wording.
Thank you for your time.
Actually, Eric, I'm not done with you. Okay, based on what you've said then, we have a line here setting a maximum income for the applicant. Do you agree on having a maximum limit of five times the fee, or are you okay with Tijani's suggestion that the applicant should, to be successful, should not have an income higher than the application fee? What's your position?
Thank you for the follow-up, Evan. I pointed out previously that the income model itself is problematic since applications will probably have a fixed fund and no income, and just a burn rate until failure or success. But leaving aside the whether income is the right choice, I agree with Tijani, not with Olivier or the five times number. One time is sufficient. I urge you to go back to the 3rd of the March when I posted mail on what I believe are the specific capabilities the applicant must have for the application fee, for the operational costs, for the challenges, for the continuity instrument. I spent several hours, much more than that, on crafting a means of testing the applicant's eligibility in terms of capability and coming up with criteria. And only Elaine bothered to comment on that entire set of notes. It's
okay.
Frustrating that the text can't really be fixed over months of time, but clearly the five times is wrong. Thank you.
Okay, so the gist of it is that you're agreeing more with Tijani on the number, but disagree in general that the income model is useful. We'll go back to your email and see if it might be a reasonable substitute for this. Okay. All right, so are there any other comments right now on the point of on 3.1.
Tijani.
Okay. Tijani, go ahead and then Dev.
Yes. For the third time, I repeat, for the minimum gross income, what is decided on?
As of right now, okay, well, let me ask then. Olivier, given what you've just heard, do you modify what you say or do you still disagree with Tijani's point?
No,
thank
the minimum.
You.
The minimum, not the maximum.
No. Well, right now the point is talking about the maximum, so I'm trying to deal with the wording that's in this statement right now.
Thank you, Evan. Actually, Eric has a very good point, specifically with regards to the actual income. being mentioned in there. It could be a burn rate rather than income. It could be a lump sum that they've actually got to start with. With regards to the actual number, this is where I don't feel that strongly about this point anyway. But and I understand Eric's point that, yes, you can run a top-level domain at a lesser cost than some of what the staff has come up with. And so I'm not going to contradict him on that. I'm just wondering, you know, I'm hoping we don't price too many people out of the too many organizations out of the equation. There are some organizations that will have more than the amount that we have on screen, and that will still require support one way or other because they'll need that little thumbs, you know, to sort of push them forward. But if the consensus is otherwise, I'm not going to fight for it. Thank you.
So I would simply, okay, thank you, Olivier. I would simply make the note before getting to Jenny that if we leave in the maximum annual income of $185,000, the likelihood of any government on Earth being able to satisfy that requirement is probably pretty low. So while we may be including the ability for governments to be part of the application pool, by saying that you have to have a maximum income of $185,000, we've essentially said that no government on Earth is running that tightly. And so this is probably a practical barrier to entry for a government applying by putting in this limit. Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Any figure you will put there will forbid any government to be eligible. So any maximum you put will prevent them to be eligible, I think.
Well, then we have to consider Eric's alternative criteria to income in talking about the abilities of the applicant. If we, you're absolutely right, Tijani. As long as we have a maximum annual income in here, even if it's five times, we've essentially shut out governments.
Yeah.
So this is something that is somewhat contradictory in what the group is doing. Cintra, go ahead. Cintra, your hand was up. Go ahead.
Yes, sorry. I don't think we should waste too much time on governments. I think the onus is on the GAC to work with us to find an acceptable criteria or formula for governments. So if these criteria work for our other entities or potential applicants, I say we run with it and let the GAC come and work with us and give suggestions otherwise. Thank you.
Okay. So tentatively speaking then, we're going to implement the suggestion that was made by Tijani and backed up by Eric that we change this from five times to one time, and then we will deal with the government issue later on where we've gone to that paragraph. Okay, any other comments in 3.1 before we move on? Speak now or we keep going. Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, still in 3.1, the first, the minimum gross incomes that I sent by email, Evan, it is not here now. What is decided on it? I said it must cover at least the instrument, the financial instrument obligation, instead of three times, etc.
Tijani, I think that is incorporated. Perhaps you can refresh your page.
Ah, okay.
The one
sorry.
I have on the wiki right now is your wording, Tijani.
Yes.
Ah, okay. I am sorry. Okay. I didn't refresh.
Okay. So, on 3.1, going once, going twice, gone. All right. We're at 3.2, where there is, okay.
Moment. May I speak, Ivan?
Go ahead, Tijani, but we're trying to get through this.
Yes. The last paragraph is repeated twice. That's all.
And the
whole text, it is repeated twice.
Okay, we'll deal with that.
Okay.
Okay, in 3.2, Eric, I'm going to have to go back to...
Evan.
Oh, sorry, Olivia, go ahead.
Okay, what is the number that is given in the applicant guidebook that mentions the minimum gross income covering at least the financial continued operation instrument obligation?
Now 3 years operation, now.
Okay,
and
so...
And we are asking for the reduction of this instrument for the applicants that are selected for support.
Because the problem I see here is the minimum gross income number might be higher than the maximum annual income number of $185,000. Could it not be?
No.
If I can get in the queue again.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. This is Eric Werner-Williams. Olivier, the temporary drafting group legal has been dealing with the continuity instrument more than any place else within the corporation that I'm aware of. In discussions with staff, staff has recognized that the cost of operation is undefined. I've proposed that the cost be that of operating a quiescent registry, that is, being able to respond to takedown requests, being able to create a zone file, and very little else. Handling renewals, for instance, is included, but not handling new registrations and not conducting marketing or other activities which are intended to generate greater revenue. Others have argued that it should be the cost of running an active registry, leading to a much higher assumption about what the annual cost of the continuity instrument will be when it's monetized. So we don't actually have a formal commitment from staff what it means, what they are looking for in terms of continuity. If it's just enough to keep the thing from disappearing, then it's a very low figure. If it's enough for it to operate as if it's not actually in continuity, then it is a much higher figure. I think for our point of view, the correct answer is the lowest one possible. Thank you.
Olivia, do you want to follow up to that?
Well, can I just ask, Eric, what is the number that you think might be achievable? All I'm trying to do here is to keep the window as wide as possible so as for us not to be in a situation where the window is actually so tight that there will be no one qualifying.
That's a very good question, and the answer actually is it depends. If we assume that the applicant exists in an abstract with no relation to any other, it's no longer an applicant now, it's a registry. If we assume that the registry exists in isolation, then of course each one of the costs actually exists. If we assume that the registry is operating on a registry service provider's back end or has joined some kind of pool for the service for continuity services, then the actual cost of implementing the monthly reports to ICANN, the zone file preparation, the de minimis function of registry continuity operations is exceedingly small and quite difficult to quantify. It is effectively free. Having done registry operations now for the better part of a decade, I can tell you that the incremental cost of adding the reporting function to ICANN and adding the additional zone file and so forth costs for the minimus operation of the second and subsequent zones that are operated by a single registry operator is trivial. It is really a for free or a nuisance cost. Staff has conceptualized the applicant as existing in isolation from all other parties, which is, of course, ridiculous because hundreds of applicants will be using the back ends of existing providers such as VeriSign, Afilias, NewStar, Core, and so forth. These parties will experience no continuity costs actual when they prepare their applications because this is built into the structure of the services which they're purchasing from the registry back-end services operator. So if we try to answer this in the abstract, we end up with a high number. If we try to answer this in the best guidance to the applicant sense, we come up with a very low number. My view is that we should be offering the best advice we can to applicants, which is you must, for your sanity and self-protection, join some form of pooling mechanism at the very least to allow you to have the lowest possible continuity cost. So you've asked for a number, and my My response is it really depends upon which of these two fundamental choices you make. Thank you.
Eric, I'm going to cut you off because we have a little bit. We got a short amount of time to go through here. Is there some specific wording where we can deal with the "it depends" part?
Yes, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm sorry to cut you off. It's just we have a lot of work to do, and we're more than halfway through this call. All right. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, since Eric says that at this point we have no commitment from staff that there will be a more minimalist version of the continuity instrument in the applicant guidebook when it goes to press, I think we need a statement here saying for our applicants, the continuity instrument must cover, and we can, you know, list this, the few specific things. Eric even suggested renewals. I don't think we need renewals. All you're trying to do is provide a guarantee to the people who have registered under the domain that it will keep working.
Okay, Alan,
and I think we need a statement to that effect.
Could you offer to send in some suggested text on specifically that point?
Not likely at this point. I'm up to my ears on Pedner, where we're starting our first review meeting in a couple of hours.
I'll take care of it.
I think Eric understands the words. He can come up with a sentence trivially if he's sending you something else.
Okay, Eric, we'll be waiting on you. If I don't hear from you by tomorrow morning, I'm going to start pestering you.
Okay.
Okay, on to 3.2. Alan, your hand's still up. Do you have
no,
any...
No, sorry. Down. Oh. Down.
Okay, 3.2. Parts at the bottom. Okay, so now, Eric, right now we still have in here LDC Category 199, landlocked developing country 432, small island developing state 722. Right now, I don't remember whether or not you said they were adequate or not. We've added Aboriginal groups. I did not specifically put in the ILO spec, so maybe we probably should. Can this go in as is, or does it still need much more work?
Just a minute, I have to look at it. Yes, you cannot use the word Aboriginal. You must use the word Indigenous, or else you have no recourse to a standard definition, which is what ILO 169 provides.
Okay, thank you. Okay, just making a note of that.
So it's Indigenous peoples with a plural. The S is important.
Okay. My apologies. That will absolutely go in. And we will add the ILO reference.
Yeah, it's a reference to Article 1 of ILO 169. That's where
okay.
Indigenous peoples is discussed, which is the closest you can get to defined.
Understood. Okay, now, Eric, there was a point number 5. Since we previously had a conversation about non-state... Oh, Olivier, did you have something to add to that? Oh, your hand's down.
It was just to ask, is it with an uppercase Indigenous and uppercase peoples?
Actually, that doesn't matter.
Okay, all right, because sometimes it does on definition-wise. Okay, thanks.
Okay, now to the point number 5. Eric, we had a conversation in a previous meeting about groups from non-state defined entities. Is there some specific wording that we can add here briefly and succinctly that will get the point across that we're specifically trying to empower groups that are not defined within specific states?
Well, Indigenous covers an enormous amount of that, and it really depends upon whether you think of Palestinians as Indigenous to Palestine as opposed to the settlers.
We'd also use the example of Roma before.
That's correct. So I should provide additional language here which deals with an example such as the Roma.
Right. So can we put in a very brief, like, one-liner here that would at least enable the reader to know what we're getting at.
Yeah, so we could reference the European Union's determination that Roma are a protected status, and I can find that.
Can we not make this broader than just Roma or Palestinian?
It would be an example, such as peoples who have been designated by the European Union or similar bodies as protected class.
Sorry, just trying to capture that wording. People have been designated as a protected class, such as the Roma.
Yeah.
Is everybody okay with that kind of wording? Does anyone have any comments about it as an addition, the point five that right now is in blue pending wording? I have a check mark from Tijani, nobody with their hands up, so if that's the case, we're going to move on.
Make sure it's people for the plural. The S is important.
Okay. Okay. All right. So on to an addition, 3.2.4, underserved language eligibility. This goes back to, I think there was an attempt to propose some text here to Jenny. Did you have, your hand has gone up and then down again.
Okay.
Did you have something to add?
No, it's okay.
Okay. So we're on 3.2.4. This is something new that was added, and this went back to conversations between Eric, Edmund, Andrew, and Elling, and we thought some text was going to come in. And to specifically to mention service to languages whose presence on the web was limited. If we don't get some specific wording, I'm going to suggest taking this out because we're right underneath, we're talking about community support for underserved languages. So does anyone have a problem with taking out that green text right now? Because I don't know if it gives a level of detail right now I don't think we're going to agree on between now and the next week.
Eric, I think you're correct. Eric, is fine.
I'll hold on a second. Okay.
Bear with us for a second while we sort
of know who's cut out on us. Okay, thanks. Eric, go ahead.
I think that eliminating the green is fine, as the example is provided in the black that follows. I would suggest changing the IDN eligibility to underserved language support, basically looking for IDN throughout and changing it to language. We agreed on two on the last call. Thank you.
And language and not script, right?
Correct.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I got a check mark from Tijani. Okay, is there any other comment about the text that is in black relating to 3.2.4 here, communities needing to preserve language or culture, community support for underserved languages? There's the actual heading, community supports for underserved languages, is clumsy language and probably needs a little bit of reworking. Sorry, just making notes for myself here. Okay, so without further ado, moving on to 3.2.5, organizations based on in lesser developed economies. Okay, so we have an addition of 3.2.6. Don't worry about the actual numbering of this because we'll probably try and integrate this a bit into the wording. But so here is where we have the paragraph that deals with the GAC request to add government sponsorships. So Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, this paragraph is repeated three times in the text. And I think that we have to remove it at all. Perhaps we can put a small remark, but I can't see it in our final document.
Okay. Okay, so to Jenny, you're saying that we've mentioned this too many times and we should simply make in a reference to the GAC request and that we encourage their further engagement in trying to figure out how we can accommodate them.
Yes.
Is everybody else okay with that kind of wording? I mean, they've come in with a very obscure wording, haven't really worked with us on this, and considering the short time frame, we really need to work with them. Okay, Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make sure that you finish it, the 2.4, because I see that there is a lot of text concerning the languages. Sometimes it is repeated, and sometimes it is useless. I don't see why we have to...
Hold on. What are you talking about 2.4?
2.4, for example, the paragraph concerning community needing to preserve language, etc. It is already in 3.1. It is, we are talking about underserved language, so we don't have to repeat a lot of times the same thing. It is as if we want to emphasize
on
a specific.
Okay. I've been moving on to 3.2.5, and you're going backwards again. What are we trying
yes,
to
add? You go very fast for on 3.2.4, and I didn't catch.
Make no apologies for that.
No problem. But explain me. That's all. I want to understand. That's all.
Okay, we were trying to get to wording on 3.2.6. You're making the point that we're talking far too much about IDNs. Do I have that right?
Language and IDN together.
Okay, Tijani, offline, if there's specific text that you want deleted or removed or combined, you'll send me that in email.
Okay. Okay, it's okay.
So I agree with you that we shouldn't make it too redundant, but at the same time, we need to make the point. So we'll leave it at that
sure.
right now and move on.
Sure.
Okay, so we are back on 3.2.6. Could somebody here possibly volunteer to rework this into a simple piece of wording saying that we invite the GAC's participation to move forward with this? Don't everybody put your hand up at once.
Hi, Evan, I can do that.
Okay. Well, since you and me and the writing team are already going to have a lot on our plate, I was sort of hoping somebody else might step forward. I guess in the absence of that, it's back on us. Okay. All righty. So under this we have the working group wish to maintain flexibility in the type of organizational structure that could apply. So this goes okay. So what we have here in the red in the bullet points, this goes back specifically to wording that was in the milestone report, if I recall. And so this was one of the negative requirements. So in other words, we're saying an application must be this, 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 this. An applicant must be this, 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 this. And here's an area where we're saying the applicant must not be one of these things. So is everybody okay with this wording? Does it come out? I don't want to contravene what we said in the milestone report. So I don't think we need to revisit the issue about geo names and corporate names and that kind of thing. The government-owned companies we're going to deal with in the paragraph we just discussed. So this will go from red to black. Okay.
This is Dave. Can I have a quick question on just a clarification on one item there regarding this?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. There's discussion earlier on 2.0 regarding a local entrepreneur in these emerging markets, nations, et cetera, where market constraints make normal business operations more difficult. Is it that a local entrepreneur can apply for a harsh about it. An open GTLE, essentially, was what's it say. Do you understand my question?
Now, when you say open, you mean as in a generic without specifically serving a community kind of?
Yeah, be it a brand or,
okay,
yeah.
It was my understanding that if something is not serving a community specifically, that it is not eligible under this program.
Okay.
That this program was not designed simply to have a financially strapped applicant to have a catch-all GTLD.
Okay, just making sure, because it's not really explicitly stated, I think.
Well,
it needs to be worded.
Of the whole issue that has been gone to in the beginning about serving a public good,
mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got a queue, but at least in my interpretation, the service to the public good inferred representing or working with a community and wasn't necessarily just, you know, an applicant with no money going after dot shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got a queue. Tijani and then Cintra.
Yes, Dave, it's clear now with the new wording because we have two main criteria and any applicant have to fill those two main criteria. The first is the need and the financial need, and the second is to be serving the public interest.
Well, just to follow up, Tijani, so this says at least one of the criteria.
No. At least one inside applicant serving public interest.
Okay.
So, Dev, criteria one is financial need. Criteria two is serving the public interest.
Okay.
We go into a little bit of detail of what describes the public interest, but I don't
right.
think that would include a general purpose TLD.
Okay. Good. All right.
Okay. Nobody else in the queue? Okay. So, moving on. Okay, there's some green text in 3.3 about who's not eligible. So applicants are not eligible if there are factors that would hinder the applicant from availing itself of the working group support. It would be self-defeating to support an applicant or application which, by virtue of disabilities, may not be able to avail themselves of any support granted. So if the applicant is aware that the application will be contentious, already bankrupt, or subject to pending litigation, they would not be eligible here. Comments on this, should this text, which is reasonably new in here, should this stay, should this go, should this be modified? What are the comments on this particular section talking about 3.3? Okay, without comment, I will assume that the group is okay with essentially leaving this is and turning it from green and red into black as part of the proposal. Olivier, go ahead.
Thank you. Just a question, and you might not need to answer that because I know it's a chicken and egg scenario, but applicants that fail due diligence obviously would also be precluded from this, and I just wonder whether there can be any kind of language on there.
To be honest with you, Olivier, I think it would be obvious, we are not replacing the applicant guidebook. We are an addendum to it, so anything that would not meet that kind of criteria in the AG itself wouldn't even get this far.
Yeah, so maybe we can add that as a line as well. Anything in the AG plus, of course, aware that the application will be consensus, etc.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ivan? I think
Pratik,
that
you
we
want to
did...
Speak? Oh, hi.
Traffic.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I thought that we didn't have agreement about this aware that application will be contentious or controversial.
Okay. I think Tijani had added that. It's my understanding that the reasoning behind that is if, since we're trying to deal with ICANN on a cost recovery basis, that we don't want to have an application coming in that will almost by its very nature require an awful lot of expenditure by ICANN to process, deal with contention issues, et cetera.
Yeah, but... yes, but how to check this? we had a discussion if it will be a priori or a posteriori checking. So that's why we should avoid this. I think we reached agreement last time about that, so I'm surprised to find it again.
Okay. Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, it's different. It's different from last time. Because
Eric, I hear you with your hand up, too.
Eric, yeah.
Okay, so Tijani first and then Eric.
Okay. It is different because here it says self-declaration. So the applicant has to declare if his application is can be contentious. If it's the case, normally it is not, he's not eligible for support. It's different because last time we said if he is, but who will tell us if he is? This is the question. This is the difference also.
Rafiq, does that answer your question?
So we are in this, we expect the goodwill of the applicant to say if his application will be contentious and then that his application are not going to have support. Yeah, why not? To expect the goodwill of the applicants, why not?
Okay, Eric, go ahead.
Thank you. I recommend removing this line. We have no idea a priori what will be contentious or not. Asking the applicant whether they think their application will be contentious really requires us to read tea leaves. The .cat application could have been contended by the Spanish state. We didn't know in advance. It wasn't. We were lucky. An honest answer here, it might be less than useful for both the applicant and the potential objectors. You don't know really in advance what objections there are going to be. So I recommend the bankruptcy reference and the litigation reference, but the contentious reference, I think, is not helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, Eric, I agree with you, but is there someone who can apply for .Africa say that there is not a problem with this TLD? It's known now. There is a problem now for .Africa, and everyone knows about it.
No, Tijani, everyone does not. There's been a marketing campaign by at least one party, possibly two, possibly three, to intimidate other applicants by asserting that they have the right to .Africa. This is entirely marketing. It's not contentious until it's measured by a defined contention resolution mechanism. And the statements of pretendance to an application are simply don't rise to that level.
Eric, may I ask you a question? Suppose we give support to an applicant, and after the preliminary evaluation, there is opposition, and we need further evaluation, costly, very costly, and perhaps we'll need dispute resolution procedure. So what will happen for us, for our money that we give to this applicant?
Johnny, my response takes two forms. First, I addressed this in my email of the 3rd of March about the capability of the applicant. The ability to respond to challenges after the application is submitted is one of the capabilities the applicant either has to have or we have to support. It's a thing that it's not, how shall I say this, it is likely that objections will arise no matter what the application is. It is not a given that they will not. Second, it is not the case that that support money is conditional upon unpredictable future outcomes. We cannot know at the point of supporting an applicant whether or not there will be objections raised by parties in good faith or parties in bad faith, which will incur costs. So I don't understand why this becomes an issue to you that there might be an objection. Yes, there might be an objection. That is a given. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have to, I'm going to give David the last word on this because we really do need to move on. We got 15 minutes left and we haven't even touched part four.
Okay, thanks, Evan. Let's see that a lot of these questions regarding the subject of pending litigation, criminal investigation, is part of the applicant guidebook and as part of the questions and as part of the background checks and so on. So it goes back to what Olivier suggested regarding, you know, in conjunction with the applicant guidebook, applicants wording to that effect. Wording to the effect that in addition to be able to answer to all the questions in the applicant guidebook, and this also relates to a possibility of how are we going to actually evaluate it? Are we going to evaluate outside of the application guidebook, before it, during, in parallel? I think the milestone said parallel, but or can it be possibly integrated? And I know that's a long answer, so maybe we can defer this till after, because I know we have a lot of more stuff for N 3.4.
Okay. All right. On that note, we're going to move to the last part of part three, which is the actual actual formula that we want to use. So as of right now, there are two that have been put forward. If you are on the wiki page, there is one that is in bold and in red at the bottom of part. There are three attempts. So one is mentioned application formula in bold and red at the end of part three in the main text. There is one that Alain Béranger has put forward. It is the second last comment on the page. And there's a third one somewhere that I'm not...
Hi, Evan. They're all in the same place, all right, on the application formula. Yours is at the top, mine is the first O, and Alan is his own is at the third O, the second O, sorry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's nail down what the application formula should be. From the sounds of it earlier in the call, it essentially means it must be financial need and it must serve the public benefit. So this may actually simplify things a bit because it's a financial need and the public benefit, which could be this, or this. Dave, are you speaking to this now?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Then to Jenny.
Oh, sorry.
Eric, did I hear you going in the queue?
Not yet, but thank you for asking.
Okay, Tijani, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I propose the following formulation. To be eligible for support under this program, an application must first demonstrate applicant financial need and sustainability, which is 3.1, and aim... The application must aim at serving public interest and belong to at least one of the six listed categories, which is 3.2, and include a declaration that the applicant and the application are not ineligible for support, which is 3.3.
Okay. Okay, so this is financial need and public interest and make a declaration. So those three.
Yes.
Okay, so that's essentially the one that Cintra has put forward, and I'm absolutely okay with that. Does anybody else have a problem with that? That's essentially a three-pronged. It must be financial need and public benefit, as we've described above, and make a declaration that they believe themselves to be eligible. based on what they've read of our criteria.
I sent it on the chat.
Does anyone have a problem with what Tijani has suggested, which is based on Cintra's proposal?
Evan?
Okay. Sorry, Cintra, go ahead.
I just want to mention that Carlton and Aline, they suggested both that public interest should come before need, at least be stated before need in terms of the criteria. That is slightly divergent. Even though we're giving them equal weight, it's slightly divergent to how the wording is stated in the charter as well as the milestone report. But it's up to the group to decide, just in terms of order, how it wants the formula to be stated. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess my problem is the fact that I can't talk to either of them here. But if the two criteria are of equal weight, that is, if you don't have the financial need, you don't qualify. If you're not serving the public interest, you don't qualify. Does it really matter which one is listed first?
Mm-hmm. No matter.
Cintra, based on your understanding, since I can't ask them, why did it matter to them?
Matter to me, but I know it's a point that they feel strongly about. You know, and similarly, I also see Tijani feels strongly about need being placed first. So I know it's something that we should not give too much time to, but I do think let's decide one way or the other.
Okay. From my point of view, since they have equal weight, I don't care. All right. If that's the case, then I'm going to ask for a show of hands in Adobe Connect. If you believe that financial need should be first in the list of criteria, okay, sorry, I have Tijani and Olivier's hand up. Go quickly.
Yes. My point is that the financial need is compulsory, is mandatory. That's all. I don't care if it is first, if it is second. Someone who is not needy cannot be qualified. That's all.
Okay. So, all right, Tijani, then we can settle this actually pretty quickly. Olivia, you go first, and I'm going to suggest something.
Thanks, Evan. I don't care about the order, but I do wonder, with regards to governments, how do they qualify in there, or is that going to be a totally separate track that we'll sort out with the GAC?
I think what you just said is correct, in that the original milestone report said that governments cannot qualify. The GAC has asked to be in. We're probably going to have to add some wording in here that will indicate that we're going to continue to move forward with them to figure out how to integrate that.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, having said that, since based on what Cintra has said, that being first, even though the two criteria are of equal weight, that mentioning public need first in the list of criteria is important to them, and it is not important to some of the rest of us. Is there an objection to simply listing the public need criteria first, with the full awareness that if somebody doesn't meet the financial need, they don't qualify? All right. Does anyone have an objection to that? Going once, going twice. Gone. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to include them as equal criteria. We will list the public good one first. But it will be made clear that if somebody does not meet the financial need, they don't qualify. All right. Well, okay, we have gotten through the entirety of Part 3, and I thank you all for your patience in going through this. We have 5 minutes left in this 90-minute call. Do we start on Part 4 or we may be
Evan?
Able to deal with this because there seems to be very little contentious in it.
Evan, it's Rafik.
Hey, go ahead. Actually, I guess I should yield the chair back to you since we've done Part 3. What do you want to do?
Okay. I think last time we agreed to go to Part 5. Because we had a lot of work to do there. But just also we have a question from Carla that maybe we need to
give an answer to it. She was asking if the report is going to reflect full conscious, partial conscious, and like the milestone, like the milestone report, and also if the report is going to recommend how the funding will be achieved, keeping up with the cost neutral principle.
First of all, I think that what we're doing here is getting full consensus. The deliberate way I've been going through this has been trying to get to wording that everybody can agree on. So I'm really hoping we're not going to have an issue where we have to deal with full or partial consensus. As far as the cost aspect, that is definitely integrated into Part 4. So if we are asking for reduced costs, we definitely have to make a mention of how this is going to be impacted on cost recovery. At the same time, if this is going to be input used in the creation of a foundation issue, then cost recovery is a non-issue. So we have to deal with this as we're working on Part 4. Now, Rafiq, you're the chair. However you want to proceed from here. We have 3 minutes left in the 90-minute call.
Okay, we can finish with the Part 4, hopefully now, and then we still have the Part 5 for next call.
Now, there are no, there's only a small amount of non-black text in Part 4. And the question is at this point, and Rafiq, you make a good point in wanting to go directly to 5. Do we even put in, to what extent do we put in Part 4? Because we certainly don't have the ability to fully research. Do the research necessary to justify the kind of price reduction that has been advocated for the duration of a lot of our calls. One of the things I think we're going to have to ask to do is to ask for a little bit more time to try and research this, because we've asked to reduce some of the costs. We have some rationale we can put in, but that rationale does not exist in this Part 4. So, Sintra, go ahead. Sintra, you had your hand up?
Yes. I just want to say that this price reduction bid, I think it's coming primarily from the milestone report. So we can mention that we haven't had time to really focus on it, as well as, you know, we will have to work with staff on it. But just we are repeating what was stated in the milestone report, which is, price reduction should be implemented to encourage.
Okay, so essentially what we need to do is to add a preamble onto Part 4 saying that this is something that has been part of the Jazz Group since the milestone report, and that we continue to advocate that price reduction should be a goal.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Is that reasonable? Does
mm-hmm.
anyone on the call disagree with that? Okay. Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, I do agree with that. But the text here need rewriting. The organization of the text, the if you want, how it is written now, I will propose you something different. Not different, but I will reorganize it and send you what is my proposal.
So you're basically proposing to give it some more clarity rather than change.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect. Okay, clarity is always good. Okay, so if that's the case, then so Part 4 is going to be essentially, is there any comment on the part that is in green and in red, the one paragraph and the one sentence? when we talk, there's a line there, what other non-financial relief is possible? Eric, I'm going to, oh, sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Yes, sorry. I was just commenting on the concept of price reduction or foundation. I believe the question is quite moot at this point. If we're looking at first round, there is no opportunity to put a foundation in place and do all of that work. It's not going to happen in that time frame. So price reduction in one form or another, or a subsidy, is the only option we have for the first round. Longer term, the situation may change. But it's not an issue of debate at this point. Thank you. Or shouldn't be anyway.
Okay, so that should go in. Sorry, just making a note here. And again, I've made the point myself that I didn't believe ICANN should be in the role of philanthropy, but that's, I guess, a different issue. Okay.
Evan, for the record, if it's a foundation, it is not ICANN. It may be money that comes from ICANN, but it's not ICANN. That's the whole concept of the foundation. Thank you.
Okay. Eric, is there a possibility you could give a little assistance in helping us figure out the kind of price reductions that are possible while maintaining the cost recovery mantra?
Well, that's a big task.
Well, put it this way. We're grasping at straws. We have not had a lot of opportunity to do research. Staff has been unhelpful in helping us to identify things. So any stab we can take at this will be better than not taking a stab at it.
Of course. We're discussing the text below the price reduction in green. I see five bullets. Is that what we're dealing with?
Actually, it could be any part of this part four.
Okay.
So put it this way, Eric. Any suggestions you can offer would be appreciated. You've got a depth in some of these issues that goes well beyond most of the other participants in this call. So if you could possibly suggest some specifics that would allow us to identify places where ICANN could reduce its costs without compromising its mantra of cost recovery, that would be helpful.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then we can declare part four to have been covered here, and we are 2 minutes into 2 minutes over the 90-minute call, and I hand things back to Rafiq.
Thank you, Evan. As I understood that we are waiting for some comments and reward from volunteers, and for the next call we will work on the part five. But it will be more also helpful that comments and rewarding to be sent before the call so we can make more progress. Any comments, any feedback? Otherwise, I will adjourn this call for today.
I want to thank everybody that was on the call. We got an awful lot done. This was all substance. This was all good. So I really want to applaud and thank everybody. We've had an awful lot to do, and we've accomplished quite a bit today.
So thank you, everybody. And we adjourned the call for today. See you in Friday.
Absolutely. And hopefully on the mailing list and or the Skype chat before that.
Evan, would you stay on the call for a minute, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone. Carol, you can Eric and Evan, do you still need this recorded, or can we stop the recording?
You can stop the recording. I'm fine with that.
Carol, if you'd be so kind as to just stop the recording, and we're just going to stay on the line for a few minutes.
Sure, I'll do that for you. One
Thank
moment.
You.